I think some of you know, Khan, he's given us now a couple talks here at FIMC. And I first met him on the three-month retreat. It was actually so sweet meeting you there. I don't know if you remember that, Khan, but meeting on the three-month retreat there. And then we got to connect more. He did the advanced practitioner program at Spirit Rock as well. So we started to have a connection there. And I didn't even have to twist his arm too much to get him to come teach here. So I was very grateful that he was willing when asked him if he'd be willing to do this. And he's been practicing for over a decade in the Zen and Vipassana tradition, and as well as has this varied background, a documentary filmmaker and international humanitarian for the United Nations, a lawyer for the federal courts, and loves to dance. And I just feel so grateful that he's willing to come and share with us the Dhamma in this way. So thank you, Khan, and I hand it over to you.
Yeah, thank you, Brian. It's such a privilege and honor to be here with you all. Thanks for coming and being a part of this and having me be with you. And Brian, thanks again for the invitation to do this. It's really, yeah, it feels like an honor and a privilege to get to contribute something and offer something. So why don't we start by maybe doing an arriving? And I think usually there's like a breakout, right, where people get to check in a little bit. Yeah, so I'm going to break us out into little breakout rooms. And the invitation is to just share. I propose two things, and you can do what you want here while you're in there because I can't see, but I'll offer two ideas for things to check in with, which is your name, where you're joining from, how you're feeling this evening, and maybe, you know, what's drawing you here? What's calling you to be here on this evening? Okay, looks like we're all back. Welcome back. Hope you had a good time in the breakout rooms. So I want to start off doing a little poll of the folks in the room. Just by show of hands, how many of you have encountered people doing social distancing in a way that makes you feel uncomfortable? Okay, a lot of us. Okay. How about this one? How many of you have felt uncomfortable discussing social distancing with people who you're perceiving that they're either doing it more or less than you are? Yeah. Yeah. Oh, okay, so it's not just me. So that's a good reality check for me. Yeah, I think that's part of what motivated me to choose this topic tonight around social distancing. And it's kind of evolved a little bit. For me, it's a topic that's really close to my heart because probably like all of you, like all of us right now, we're making some unprecedented decisions based upon the social distancing thing, and it can be really hard. I asked my roommate, who's a good friend of mine, to stop living with me a couple months ago, and that was a hard decision, and it was a painful one for both of us. And I've had to tell friends of mine who have wanted a hug that I'm not comfortable hugging them. And yeah, so there's some tenderness and sadness and discomfort in this topic for me. And that's why it felt really alive. And so it brought up this question for me of, you know, what can the Dharma and the wisdom of the Dharma offer on this topic? And originally I was thinking about, you know, Sila and ethics, and maybe that would shed some light on this. And I realized what was really alive for me, and hopefully it'll be alive for you as well, is knowing how to be with judgment and disagreement about this issue that's really important. Like, what is my own relationship to judgment and disagreement on something that feels so foundationally important? And it's, you know, I think it applies so acutely to social distancing, but it applies to so much else that's going on in our world right now too. You know, our politics, issues of race, you know, a lot of judgment and disagreement when it comes to beliefs that are pretty close. And I think that's such a beautiful topic for us to focus on, because I really always like to think about, what does this practice look like off the cushion? And for me, taking practice off the cushion, for me on the cushion, you know, it's this place where we often say we're cultivating some wisdom and some compassion, maybe, you know, working with just an inner focus and awareness. And so I would love to think that off the cushion, can I engage the world off the cushion? Can I engage discord in a manner that is generative, that really furthers wisdom and compassion? So that's my desire. That's the vision for what the Dharma can maybe offer to this discomfort around judgment and disagreement about things that matter a lot to us, like our safety and social distancing. So I want to share two perspectives on this, and I find them both equally delightful. One is a very practical perspective. So, you know, how to work with these judgments and disagreements in our relationships. And the second perspective is a metaphysical one, which, you know, when I think of the word metaphysical, sometimes it can seem kind of impractical, but I'm hoping to offer it in a way tonight that it's, I'll call it deeply practical. So hopefully one or both of those will be supportive tonight. So I want to start with the practical. And there's two key things I want to offer around what can be practical here from the Dharma. One is mindfulness of our intentions. And two is something that I'll call connection before correction. So let's start with mindfulness of intentions. And I want to read from the Dhammapada. And this is Gil Fronsdal's translation. And the chapter here is called The Just. And it really spoke to me around this issue of judgment when it comes to our beliefs about what's right and other people and what we're doing and what they're doing. So I'm just going to read the first two stanzas of this. One is not just who judges a case hastily. A wise person considers both what is and isn't right. Guiding others without force, impartially and in accord with the Dharma, one is called a guardian of the Dharma, intelligent and just. One is not wise only because one speaks a lot. One who is peaceful, without hate, and fearless is said to be wise. Peaceful, without hate and fearless is said to be wise. And this passage from the Dhammapada really, really touches me on this topic of judgment. This first stanza to me is about, being able to judge requires a wisdom. And wisdom isn't kind of speaking what you know. It's being one who is peaceful, without hate, and fearless. Yeah, and that lands for me in large part because I notice when I'm not that. Yeah. And so peaceful, without hate, and fearless. So I think the opposite of that for me would be fearful, having ill will, and violent. And not necessarily violent with, hitting somebody, but violent maybe with my words. Fearful, ill will, and violent. Yeah. And I notice that in myself, especially when it comes to this topic of being with judgment and disagreement in something that matters a lot, like social distancing, for example. And that's why I like to bring up this idea of our mindfulness practice applying to our intentions in being with our beliefs and our judgments. Because I find for me that when I can bring that mindfulness that I'm cultivating on the cushion, noticing what's arising and falling, and being able to bring it out into that place out in the world where I can notice, oh, you know what? There's a kind of a violence here or an ill will here or a fear underneath all of that. And there's a way in which noticing that for me lets it ground a bit and it creates a little bit of space for me to have, even if just a little bit of peaceful without hate and fearless. Yeah, kind of like a magic of practice is noticing these afflictive pieces somehow create space for their opposites. A couple places where I notice this, one thing I've been noticing is I'll be visiting, social media, and I'll see people posting things that I really disagree with. People in my community that I didn't know had some beliefs that are really different than my own beliefs. Seeing some laughter there. I'm guessing that some of you have had this experience. Like, oh, wow. We have very, very different beliefs about what's going on in the world right now. Okay, that's interesting. And I noticed for me when that comes up that there's this real sense of like pushing it away. Like, I really want to just push it away. Like, can I get this out of here somehow? And part of me just wants to like, wow, I just need to defriend, unfollow. Like, how can I get this person out of here? There's an impulse that's like that. And so sometimes as my like cursor is like moving to unfriend button or whatever, it's a moment of like, oh, wait a minute. All right. Oh yeah, there's an awareness here of, yeah, there's this pushing away, like a violent kind of pushing, an ill will of like, you're wrong, get out of here. And underneath that is some fear for me. It's like, wow, if you believe that, then what is going to happen? Like, maybe I'm not safe or other people I care about aren't safe. Like, whoa, that's scary. Yeah. And I think it's a real powerful thing to be able to have that space to even notice that. And for me, it creates just, that second of, oh, that's up for me, creates a little space to say, okay, wait, I don't need to defriend this person. I don't even see this person, in my COVID life. And, when I do see this person, maybe I could engage them and get curious about why it is that they believe what they believe. Maybe there's something possible there that is generative, that can further the wisdom and compassion for both of us. So that's this topic of mindfulness of intention, of being with judgment and disagreement in a way that notices what's there underneath. And the second topic I want to offer in this kind of practical perspective is the idea of connection before correction. And I want to share something around skillful speech on this topic of connection before correction. So from the Abhaya Sutta, we get this list of qualities of skillful speech. Probably heard some variant of it. Essentially, one only speaks if it is factual, true, helpful, kind, endearing, and timely. Factual and true, helpful and kind, endearing and timely. And there's a lot to unpack there. I could give a whole talk about that. But I really want to focus on one piece of it that I think is essential in this context, which is this word that's translated as endearing. And it's often described as spoken in a way the other person can hear. And I love that. Spoken in a way the other person can hear. Why even speak if the other person's not going to hear it? And one way that I've been really working on this piece of speaking in a way that the other person can hear is this concept of connection before correction. And I'll share a story about that from my own life. I mentioned earlier that I asked my roommate to de-roommate, and she's a good friend of mine. And we had a long period to be with that. And we were exploring lots of alternatives before we arrived at that. And we talked about it a lot, processed it a lot. And at one point, she invited a friend of hers, who was a facilitator, a group facilitator. He really said, oh, I really want to support you two in this, because it sounds like you're kind of stuck. You can't figure out how to solve this without one of you moving out. Let me talk to Khan. And I didn't really know him, but I knew of him. He was a close friend of my roommate. And she requested of me to chat with him. And so we got on a call, and he was jumping into talking about, well, here's a situation, like, what do we need to do? Like, how can we fix this and this and that? And I felt really triggered. Like, I felt really a sense of some resentment. Yeah, I was feeling some resentment and some mistrust. And, I remember this idea of connection before correction. And, part of me wanted to kind of like argue my point about kind of my preferences and standing my ground about, what I thought was right about, the social distancing level we were going to do. And part of me was even afraid to bring that up with him. And so I came back to this idea of connection before correction. And I said to him, hey, I'm feeling really, really uncomfortable. I'm kind of triggered. And I'm not feeling particularly connected to you. And I think it would really be helpful for this conversation if we establish that. And would you be willing just to maybe listen and play back to me kind of what you understand I'm saying, if I just share a little bit about how I'm thinking about this? I don't really want to jump into solving any problems yet. I just want to kind of feel heard about it. And he said, sure. And yeah, I got to share a little bit about how I was feeling, not even about social distancing, just kind of sharing a little bit of processing around like, wow, I notice I don't know you very well. And I'm feeling kind of distrustful. And I want to work on this and solve this because I really love my roommate. I love her as a friend. And yet I'm feeling really bad in this conversation. And he played all of that back and he just repeated it really well. And something in me was able to land and feel grounded and stable. And from there, he actually had a lot of really great ideas. And he proposed this whole way of thinking about it that was helpful for us. And ultimately, we still decided to separate ways. But just appreciated the power of connection. Sometimes it's really tempting just to think that, oh, if we can just get smarter about it and have like a better tool or a better way of thinking about it, that can fix things, or share some data I've gotten. Look here, like if you saw this information, maybe you would think differently. But it so rarely works out like that, right? It's a way in which this thing in the Abhaya Sutta about speaking in an endearing way, creating the conditions to be heard, to feel heard, so that the other person can hear. Yeah. So connection before correction and mindfulness of intention. These are two kind of practical perspectives from the Dhamma that, that I hope can be supportive. And I want to shift gears a little bit to this other perspective, this metaphysical perspective, what I'll call the deeply practical perspective. And it's been on my mind a lot too. And I was even thinking about this word metaphysics. So looking that up, and the dictionary definition said, it's philosophy relating to first principles of how does reality work and how do I even know how reality works? Yeah. Which is kind of like an abstract thing to think about. But I want to posit that it's going to be deeply practical too in relating to this question of how do we be with strong beliefs and disagreements around things that matter a lot to us. So I want to read a quote from Nagarjuna. And Nagarjuna is a guy who hung around in like the second century, a Buddhist philosopher in southern India, and kind of widely considered the most important Buddhist philosopher after the historical Buddha, right? Yeah. So this quote I want to share from him, and bear with me, this is going to go kind of maybe a little deep for a minute, and then we're going to pull it back out and figure out what is deeply practical about this deep thing. Nagarjuna said, all beliefs are mental fabrications. There has never been a single belief by which one could enter the true essence of things. Yeah. It's kind of, I don't know how that feels for you. For me, it's it has this experience both of creating a kind of open sense of awe of like, wow, all beliefs are fabrications. I just made them up. And none of them are related to the true essence of things. There's both this feeling for me of like, wow, awe and openness, and a kind of a terror too of like, wow, how do I know anything? And where do I go from here? Yeah. And I think that's so helpful right now in regards to a lot of issues, especially this kind of social distancing confusion that's up. Because for me, I have a real anxiety about not knowing what's true. I think for me, there's this way in which a big part of my fear that I mentioned earlier, when I get underneath the ill will, violence, is a kind of a fear of, wow, if you believe something really different than what I believe, like, how do I know what I believe is true? And if I don't have that, there's like a feeling of chaos. Wow. If I can't trust knowing that this is real, my way of thinking is real, then oof, where do we go from there? And so for that reason, and maybe, I don't know if any of you can identify with that sense of fear of like, oh, my belief is being challenged and there's something terrifying about that. For that reason, I think Nagarjuna pointing at this thing about saying like, yeah, maybe your beliefs are just totally fabricated, would be really powerful because it's looking right at the thing that I'm really afraid of. And Brian mentioned that we spent some time together on the 3-month retreat. And one thing I really appreciated that the teachers mentioned a lot on that 3-month retreat was what's in the way is the way. What's in the way is the way. So there's a way in which this like fundamental fear about that, my reality is being challenged. Like maybe there's something in there that is really powerful in this liberation and the spiritual practice. Yeah. So I mentioned this feeling of openness and terror, and I want to invoke this quote from Chogyam Trungpa, and not just invoke it as a quote, but I really want to invite us to try to feel into it in a way. For those of you that were at my last talk, I'm a dancer and a dance teacher, so I really like to invite people to feel things in their body, and I think this quote is so helpful for that. So let's play a little thought experiment, and maybe this, no, it's like a little imagined meditation here. So yeah, imagine closing your eyes, or just close your eyes if you're comfortable with that, and I'll guide us through a little imagined visualization based on this quote from Chogyam Trungpa. And if you're not familiar, Chogyam Trungpa is a Tibetan Buddhist teacher. And he established Shambhala tradition in the West. So I want you to imagine we're in an airplane. Treat this more like a dream. Then you're actually, it's like you're in a dream and you're in an airplane. So things are kind of soft and everything just sort of feels like it flows. It happens for a reason. And it turns out that we're in this airplane and we're going off and skydiving. And it doesn't even matter if you would never do this. You know how dreams work like that? It's like kind of short circuits any kind of like what we would normally do or what we're afraid of. It's like, oh, we're just skydiving. And for some reason, that's totally normal. And we're in the plane, and it's our turn to hop out. And so we just hop out, and we're not so worried about it. It's a dream, and everything just seems natural. Like, oh, I'm just skydiving. Here I am. Whoop, out the plane. Oh, wow. So just imagining kind of looking around and being like, wow, this is so different than being in the plane. So much space. Yeah, the sky, the blueness of it. Wow. And then there's this moment where you have this realization in the dream of like, oh, I'm not wearing a parachute. Wow. For me, like my stomach drops a little bit. It's like, whoa, this is really scary. I just jumped out of a plane and I don't have a parachute. And I'm kind of looking around my body like, oh, is there a parachute here? Like, no. And then I kind of notice as I look around and scan around, and I'm kind of afraid. It's like, well, I look in all these directions and I notice there's also no ground. Yeah, it turns out outside the plane, there's not even any up or down. I'm just flying through space. And there's an awe there of, whoa. You know, the terror of realizing the parachute is still there, and there's like an awe of, whoa. Well, there's nothing but space. So yeah, just noticing what that's like for you. And when you're ready, if you have your eyes closed, you can come back. Yeah. So that's this Chogyam Trungpa quote. He says, enlightenment is like falling out of an airplane. The bad news is there's no parachute. The good news is there's no ground. And to me, that really captures my experience of being with this idea from Nagarjuna of my beliefs are fabrications. I made them up. And they're not actually the true essence of things. That's both really opening, profoundly opening, and terrifying. So that's the deep part. I want to pivot to what's deeply practical about that. What's deeply practical about falling out of the airplane and not having a parachute and there being no ground? Well, Nagarjuna said this other quote that I really like. All is possible when emptiness is possible. Nothing is possible when emptiness is impossible. And for me, that's related to this piece around beliefs being empty and just being fabrications. It's like, it's terrifying that I don't have a belief to stand on, but it's really liberating to realize, well, I actually have the freedom to choose a belief. And if I'm freed from the attachment to my belief, I have a lot of space to play in, a lot of space. Yeah, and that's related to something else that Nagarjuna said that's really profound. He said, emptiness is the womb of compassion. So there's a way when I'm not attached to a particular belief, when I have the freedom to choose, when I'm aware that I'm fabricating all of this and I can design the belief, that spaciousness invites naturally a kind of compassionate arising. Yeah. And I think that's deeply practical. You know, is it possible to operate from a non-judging advocacy for one's compassionate impulse? Instead of thinking, I'm right, you're wrong, or you're right, I'm wrong, What if I just decide this is the reality that my compassionate heart is calling to create? And what would it look like to act from that place, to connect with you from that place, rather than being concerned about, am I right or are you wrong? That's an irrelevant question from the perspective of all beliefs are mental fabrications. All that matters is, can I connect with you in a skillful way to manifest this vision that's emanating from my compassionate heart? So hopefully that can be a deeply practical perspective from the Dharma of, can I let go of attachment to views being right or wrong, good or bad? And can I be with an awareness that I am fabricating this compassionate impulse from the heart and relating to people from that place? So I want to finish by reading this quote from Jack Kornfield, which I think really connects with this idea. It's from his book, Wise Heart. He said, the world is imperfect. Instead of struggling to perfect the world, we relax. We rest in the uncertainty. Then we can act with compassion and we give our best. Without attachment to the outcome, we bring fearlessness and trust to any circumstances.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.